Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 US-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture. And when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space. Just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
All right, it's Film Study with Ken McCusick. Week 15, looking at the offense this time, as the Ravens won 27-10 victory over the Browns in Cleveland this week. And the Ravens are in good shape, it looks like, to finish out the season. Ken McCusick, how are you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
I am doing, normally I come back with an Oriole reference, so I'm doing better than Zach Britton, who is now going to have surgery tomorrow and miss 4 months of baseball.
Oh, no, because, I didn't hear that yet. That's terrible.
A torn Achilles on his Landon leg.
So this is his last season as an Oriole anyway, right?
Yeah, it gets interesting, and I think we might do a bonus 336 maybe tomorrow to talk about it, because the Orioles might want to consider just cutting him now and saving some of that money off the contract, because he was going to get paid big this year, and now he's missing at least 4 to 5 months.
Wow.
And
that would
there
be
goes
a very so it would really be a zero trade value situation.
Oh yeah,
obviously.
He's got zero trade value. All that went up in smoke. Really wish we would have traded him last week at the winter meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's all right. Well, the Orioles will figure something out. I hope. The Ravens are who we got to be concerned with now, and the Ravens are pretty healthy still.
Yes, they are. They're getting healthy at the right time. You know, it's been a while since they've put another player on IR, so they've done well with that. And some of the players who were walking wounded have looked better. And C.J. Mosley, in particular, we talked about on the defense on Monday night, looked a lot better in this game. And there's a little bit of that going on the offensive line as well, I think, too.
Yeah, now, last week we talked about DeVoe, and how you said the Ravens were ranked really good in DeVoe. Now this week they come, it comes out the updated rankings, and they're number one in the AFC.
That's correct. They're number one in the AFC.
How does that work? The Steelers beat them twice, but they're still higher than the Steelers?
Yeah, I mean, it goes off all your games for the entire year, and it does happen sometimes that the team that has the best record is not the best DeVoe. So anyway, it looks at individual plays to determine who was winning those, and it adjusts for your opponents and adjusts for all sorts of other things as well. Their formula also is proprietary. It's one of the things people don't like about DeVoe is you can't look inside to see how the formula is done. And in that way, it's maybe a little bit similar to WAR. WAR, the formula is known, but nobody can figure it out.
Right, it's just a lot of math.
There's a lot of math involved in that. So when you really understand what WAR is, you really question it a lot more, the 294 winning percentage implied. But we're not talking baseball today. We're talking football. So we're going to stick with DeVoe.
Right, but of course, DeVoe, you can't explain to me, but the fact that the Ravens are number one in the AFC is something we can be excited for.
Yeah, well, obviously, we completely believe in DeVoe now that the Ravens are number one in the
right,
AFC.
Right, it's definitely the best stat out there.
Yeah. So anyway, the Ravens are significantly ahead of the New England Patriots, who have the second best, something called weighted DeVoe, which looks at your most recent games and gives them a higher weighting. And they're yet further ahead of the Steelers, who are at approximately plus 20, and the Ravens are plus 30, and New England's about plus 25. The Ravens are the third best team in football behind the Rams and...
I've got the rankings I'm looking at has the Rams, the Saints, the Eagles, and then the Ravens.
That's correct in terms of 1-4. However, however, there's an adjustment for Carson Wentz not playing for the Eagles now that dumps them down substantially.
Of course, I didn't think about that. Even though I'd still be scared of the Eagles if I was in the NFC.
Oh, sure.
But I, of course, losing Carson Wentz is going to affect that.
Right. So anyway, exciting time for the Ravens in terms of that. And just if you break it down, and you can see it there, Josh, they're number one in special teams, which is a huge advantage for them. They have one of the best special teams units of all time put together right now. They have the number two defense now, and that's down from last week when they were number one, but they're just barely behind Jacksonville now in terms of the second best defense in the entire NFL. And they've bumped up to 20th in the NFL in offense now, so up from 29th a few weeks ago. So that's, you know, certainly a pretty big jump to make in 3 weeks.
Yeah, I feel like saying we're first in special teams is kind of like when the Oriole fans would say, but we've got a really good back end of the bullpen.
Yeah, well, football you play about, I mean, some of them aren't as big a deal because they're kickoffs, but you play about, I want to say about 30% of your plays are on special teams.
Okay, that can't be that high. 30%? That's really high.
Yeah, that's about right. Punts and field goals almost every drive. You have kickoffs.
All right.
And so you're
that's true. And if your team offense really sucks, you're out there a quarter of the times with the offense. Sure.
There you go.
I guess I can get with that, even though it's something where I guess the way we speak of special teams, even when we have a really good special teams and we have that conversation of, all right, well, Sam Cook is really good and has really helped out this defense, but he can't be season MVP because you don't want to give MVP to a kicker.
Yeah, no team wants that stigma of worse than giving it to a kicker is giving it to a punter.
Right.
I mean, you can give it to a kicker.
Right. Yeah. Tucker has gotten it twice, I believe.
Oh, really?
As kicker. But to give it to a punter, I don't know if that's ever been done.
No, it's just it would be a very bad precedent to set. But yeah, you'd have to be a confident organization.
I mean
they've got some playmakers on defense. Suggs probably might win it. So, you know, they have some possible choices.
Sure. All right, so number one in DeVoe. But this team, we went into this season thinking really good things about the defense. Mm-hmm. Then injury, and this team kind of fell apart. How is it that now we are here in after 15 weeks of football, and we're number one in DeVoe? What happened?
Well, a lot of things have happened to make the offense a little better, and I want to get to that in a minute. But in terms of the defense hasn't been through too many serious injuries this year. So they have lost Brent Urban, that was serious, and they've now lost Jimmy Smith, and that could be serious, but it hasn't been yet. So we're right now the injury situation to date on defense is not that serious. Now, losing Marshall Yanda is, of course, terrible. And having Ken Dixon be suspended was bad. And They've got a number of other, frankly, kind of minor injuries of people on IR who weren't going to make the team anyway, but were in camp, so they got on IR and they're in a split contract now. The situation has just not gotten much worse as the season has gone along. They stayed away from the injuries they have no way to deal with. C.J. Mosley, if he got hurt, the team would be completely screwed in terms of what they could do. So it's been a pretty good year, honestly, for injuries at this point now.
On the defense side. Mm-hmm. All right. The offense has improved. And is that a health? Do you think that's a health? It looks like Joe is more healthy. He's moving around now.
I really think it's a variety of factors, and I tried to put together a list of those factors and kind of give them an increasing ranking for each. So it's not like kind of like a top 10 list, but we're going to start at the bottom, and we'll talk about in terms of one item at a time of a kind of increasing importance what we've got here.
Okay.
So I thought the first thing that is a two-point factor, we're going to call it, is the play of Ricard. Ricard has made some great blocks the last few weeks. He's been a key part of the offense in terms of a couple of touchdowns he's actually scored personally. But mostly, he's just been a very good short yardage player for the Ravens to help them get in the end zone, help them convert first downs. And, of course, a lot of people are going to point to the one they didn't convert this last week against the Browns. But he has been pretty good in that situation.
So can we label that just adding a fullback to the mix?
Yeah, I mean, he was there before, but this is how much better he's played than he was before. So it's a two-point value I'm putting on that. And you're going to have to get a relative sense of this as we go through it. The second one is Danny Woodhead returning. So everybody thought that when he returned, which was for the Green Bay game 5 weeks ago, that he would be the difference maker on offense, that he would all of a sudden, the ball would be fed to him on every play. And because
he seemed like the perfect Joe receiver type guy for that short yardage, little dump offs.
Sure. And he is. He's caught 21 balls on 24 targets, which is good. It's not great for a running back, but it's good. And he's averaged 5.6 yards per reception, which is not particularly impressive. But he has made some significant pass blocks also over the last 5 weeks. So he's a vicious little guy in terms of a pass blocker. They call him just a ball of muscle, but he attacks hard in the leg and thigh area for any oncoming rusher. So he's been very good at that and adds a couple of different dimensions. They can have him run the ball, but he can catch the ball and get some key first downs, and he can block as well. So. Anyway, that's a three-pointer, I would say, for Woodhead with regard to what he's accomplished.
Okay. How about the offensive line?
So the offensive line certainly would be the next one. And because the offensive line was already playing pretty well, I don't look at that as an enormous improvement. But they've continued to kind of gel and be less injured over the years. So now they have Skura playing, and he's played for several consecutive weeks now, and he's got the job, and they've had Hurst at left guard now for a number of consecutive weeks, and they haven't had to put him back at tackle in the last four, and Stanley has played all but one game, and Jensen has been and played the entire year at center, and Howard has been an Iron Man at right tackle as well, so they've actually had a fairly healthy and fairly consistent line with the exception of one Stanley injury. And they're playing well. Hurst has learned how to pull very effectively, and Roman is using him for the power run game. That allows Howard to stay onside on the right side, which means he can contribute something in the run game. Because if they run the other way, it's going to be very difficult for Howard to make a block in level two because he's very slow afoot. Whereas Stanley, being a little bit quicker, can make a contribution in level two even if the play is run to the other side. So. A lot of value in the way the Ravens run it, and they've done some good things with that. So right, offensive line play a four.
So for those first 3 points, you're giving that a lot of points for protecting Joe and giving Joe time and space.
Yeah, and they've done well with that. They've only sacked him 3 times in the last 4 weeks, which is a good point that I forgot to make. But other opponents are getting some pressure, but they haven't been able to convert it.
Right, but I mean, even your points on Ricard and Woodhead was their blocking ability and the ability of helping out Joe and Collins up there. So what else?
Okay, so another consideration that's been very large recently is there's finally some chemistry between Joe and Wallace. And that's been off and on at times, but recently Joe is looking for Wallace on the sideline throws. He's looking for Wallace on some of the third down throws, And he's certainly looking for Wallace primarily on the long ball because he's the best threat they got. Moore's got one of those as well. But Wallace is not only making catches on the football. What I'm also impressed with is the way he's defending against interceptions. And we'll get to that later as one of the really big things that's happening with this team. But he had two he knocked down just in the game against the Steelers. One of them was going to be a penalty anyway, so it would have been wiped out. But the first one was just a great interception strip in the end zone that I hard for me to believe it he was able to do it.
Yeah, we talk often about wide receivers not knowing that how to transition then to a defender.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, I Wallace doing that tells me Wallace has really, really wants to make a deep playoff run this year. I mean, I just think his play will be a very significant factor in the Ravens going anywhere in the playoffs because they really are so short on receivers.
All right. What about Alex Collins and the backfield? He's your next guy on the list, right? It's got to
That's
be.
right. So he's a 6-pointer right now, and I would have had him at it's about an 8-pointer before, maybe even a 9. The running game is obviously been one of the things that's been very impressive about the offense. Collins ran 12 times for 19 yards in this last game against a tough run defense, but he had been running for reduced yardage even in the previous weeks relative to what he did in his first few games. That's okay because his number of touches has been expanded, so even though it's at a lower yards per touch, I think he's having more of an impact on the game in total. Particularly against the Steelers, had that huge game. Even though they lost, of course,
Right.
he's made some key pass blocks. I'm impressed with his other contributions to the game, especially on Ricard's touchdown pass, which I think we talked about last week, where Joe came in and patted Collins on the head for making that play. He didn't go into the end zone to run after Ricard for catching the football. He knew it was Collins's cut block on Dupree
That opened it up.
that opened it up, and so that was good. So.
Where you mentioned concern a little bit there with Collins. And his total yards and running going down. What do you think that is? What do you think's going on?
Well, the more carries you get, the more other teams are able to look on you in film and try and decide, are you what are you doing? What are your
Okay.
tendencies,
So
et
they're
cetera, et
figuring them
cetera.
out.
Yeah. One of the things about Collins that's a little bit frustrating is he runs away from the blockers. So he does not follow his blocks well, worse than any good back I've ever seen. Okay, so if you're where you are and you're on the right side of my screen there, and he says, "Okay, I don't want to be behind you because you're going to clog up my lane here. I'm going to run two holes to the right of you over here where nobody is in the way."
Right.
And then, of course, he's open to the defenders at that point, and he has to break tackles.
But when that works, you're off your seat cheering for him.
Yeah, it's
Because
like, "No, don't take the
that's
shot."
also
No,
how
no,
you get
no.
the big breakaway.
Yes.
So, all right, so that was 6 points. So, hey, what's next?
So, Joe Flacco is next on the list, and he's not quite playing like Joe did in the Super Bowl run. I'm not going to claim that, but he's on a
It's
very good
not the
run where he's
playoffs
at,
yet.
he's to peak at the right time. He's had six touchdowns and two interceptions since the bye, and that's in five games. And that is greatly improved level of play. He looks like he is turning the upper body in a way that he is zipping the mid-range passes and is willing to take more chances with them now. And I think that's generally speaking a good thing. And he certainly is able to throw the fastball to the outside. And we've seen more of those 10-yard hitches than we had in a little bit. So, real positive on Joe. That's a 9 in terms of its relative importance. So, it's as important as the offensive line play, Woodhead and Ricard all put together is Joe's play.
All right. And then next, you've got the takeaway ratio. So you mentioned that a little bit with Wallace and with Flacco there. So speak to that.
Yeah. So there's been in the five games since the bye, the Ravens have had 15 takeaways and only two turnovers. Both those turnovers were the two interceptions we already mentioned by Flacco. So a 15-2 takeaway ratio is going to get it done, particularly over a five-game period. I think they were 11 and 2 or 13 and 2, I can't remember which, in their postseason run in 2000, to put that in perspective. And they were taking the ball away every
Right.
time you turned around in that run.
Right. No, that's exciting football right there. Okay, and then special teams.
So special teams and the defense together get a little bit of assist here in terms of what they're doing for the offense. The Ravens are winning field position like the great Ravens teams of old have done. They're continually with a two-way kicking game, with a punting game, with the coverage units. They're consistently winning the exchange of field position. And you know, we saw it in this last game when Cook downed three punts inside the five-yard line. And, well, Cook didn't down them, Moore downed them, but they made three punts inside the five-yard line. The 2000, 2003, 2006, and 2008 Ravens, which are probably the best four defenses the teams have ever had, were all that way in terms of winning field position and setting up the offense with short fields.
All right. All right. So, again, you cap that off with the most important thing being besides, I guess, the takeaway. You gave the takeaways 10 and field position 10. So that's, again, you're still putting a lot of emphasis on that special teams.
Yeah, that's me doing the old Josh thing about putting a defense or special teams player on my offensive MVP.
Sam Cook, MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make it happen. Let's get to the offensive line because they touched the ball a little bit more than 30%, or actually with defense and all, maybe around 30% as well. But
yeah, so they had about I may have the percentage wrong. I really need to investigate that before I speak off the top of my head. But the offensive line play, they got 72 offensive snaps in this game. Ronnie Stanley played 70 of those because Ronnie Stanley ran a pattern on one play, a very unusual play where he was designated as an eligible receiver. The play would have worked wonderfully had the Browns been playing man defense because the Ravens ran a clear-out route where Moore ran past McCourty, and had McCourty followed him, that would have worked. But McCourty instead passed him off to the guy in the next zone and then looked back and he saw Stanley was, you know, tippy-toeing around and he went immediately after him. He was too smart to be fooled by it. And so Joe correctly threw the ball away to the right side instead of throwing it for Stanley. And it didn't work out. And then furthermore, Stanley had to go to the sideline. So I'm sitting there watching on TV, and I didn't see exactly the way the play played out, but my first thought was this wasn't worth it. Stanley had to go to the sideline to arrest the play after you sent him in a pattern, and now it's 3rd and 9, and we're going to bring on, you know, some bozo left tackle, and it was Donnell. And he's going to have to try and block Myles Garrett when Stanley's having trouble doing
right,
it.
Right, right.
So it didn't seem like a worthwhile trade at the time, but now I you know, looked at the coach's tape and saw what they're trying to do. I understand it. You're taking a chance, and they were trying to score a touchdown on that one play.
Yeah, so what do we need, Stanley to work out a little more, get that cardio going?
You know, I thought he did a pretty good job of selling the fact that he was trying to pass block. But McCourty, you know, apparently had it figured out from the start. Obviously, they announced his number as eligible.
Right.
I don't think it's anything about the running down there. I think Stanley's perfectly capable of winning a jump ball. But it's a very long throw for Flacco. To Flacco to run to the other side of the field, the field's 53 yards wide, and he would have been throwing to the corner of the end zone where he had to get it over McCourty. It would have been trying to drop it in the bucket to a distance about 40 yards away, which is about like how far he has to throw on a typical vertical route.
Okay.
So that's a long way, and it's going to be a hard one to get right on the money, and he's going to be dependent upon 6'5 Stanley being able to out-jump McCourty for the football, which he probably can.
Okay, so I would assume more that that's a play that you're just expecting Stanley to be wide open over there, and he sneaks past, right?
Yeah,
and that's when you're actually going to throw it. You're not going to ask your linemen to fight for the ball.
That's right. So Joe wanted to not have to throw a teardrop. He wanted to be able to throw a high-velocity pass over towards Stanley, yeah.
Okay. Let's move on with James Hurst.
So James Hurst has been playing well. He's been one of the really good stories about this offensive line, moving inside, finding where his career ought to have been the whole time. It's like he just took his career aptitude normalizing test, as the Simpsons had, or his can't test, and determined he couldn't play left tackle, but he can play guard. And he moved inside and played well again in this game. Not extraordinarily well as he'd been playing previously, but I got a C in this game. He, in the last two games, has made 15 out of 20 pulls. And we keep talking about his pulls, and I keep giving you kind of a rolling score on this, but I kind of want to frame it up somehow for you. He's now had 71 pulls since the first 3 weeks of the season, and he's made 58 of those. So that's a little bit better than it's about an 82 in score on those. And you say, well, that doesn't seem that great. Maybe that's a B or something. But the truth of the matter is that's probably a low A because most pulls at a much higher rate result in highlight blocks or important blocks that extend plays in level two or create opportunities in level two for the back. So both of those things are very important, and generally speaking, pulls play a big part in the power run game. So Hurst has brought a lot of value to the Ravens with what he does. He's going to make a lot of money, probably somewhere else next year, and got to be happy that he was at least able to put this season together for the Ravens. Don't be bitter about losing him, because the Ravens will get a compensatory pick for him, but he's certainly going to probably stay at guard and be pretty good in the future.
All right, so just enjoy him while we have him.
Yep.
All right, Ryan Jensen, I'm hoping that's not a enjoy why we have him guy, because I'm really liking Ryan Jensen.
Right, and that's the issue, is they really can only afford one of these two guys, and they're both playing well. Jensen got an A in this game, had a very good week, and he had responsibility for Danny Shelton. This is exactly the guy that we've got Ryan Jensen for, the behemoth AFC interior defensive lineman. Shelton is the prime example, along with Hargraves at Pittsburgh and McCullers, and also Atkins for Cincinnati. So, you know, this is one of the guys that he's absolutely hired to beat, and he did a good job of it. And in this game, he had 1.5 pressures allowed. Only one of those was a straight bull rush he gave up to Shelton, but otherwise, he did a very good job with him, and got an A after adjustment in this game this week.
All right, that's always good. I hope more A's from Jensen. How about Skura?
So Skura had been kind of playing pretty darn well for a long time, and he had, I don't know if I'd call it a setback game, but he had a C this week, which has been a little bit, not quite as well as he had been playing. I'm just trying to go to it here. This is his fifth C or C plus this year. He's had 1, 2, 3 Bs, and he's had 2 A's, and he's only had 1 D. So that's been by far the most consistent Ravens offensive lineman this year, that he's had played 10 games, and 9 of them are A's, B's, or C's. So very positive season, but this was probably his second worst game of the year in this time. He missed some blocks 3 times. He had 2 half penetrations allowed, 1.5 pressures. He had a lot of trouble with Nassib, the defensive end for the Browns, and allowed him to get a PD because he didn't properly sell the screen pass with a better block at the line of scrimmage. Anyway, a game of mixed results for Skura, but he's still having a good year.
The Browns impressed me a little bit on Sunday because their defense was way better than I expected.
Yeah, I mean, just having Myles Garrett is kind of like having Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, he's a very defining defensive player, and the rest of their line is not bad. I mean, Shelton was good on his own against the run, and they have Nassib, and he's been pretty good as a pass defender, and now he's left on an island more than he was because of the fact they have Garrett on the other side. But Garrett is the guy. He's providing a lot of that pressure.
Yeah, they have the Bears and the Steelers for the next 2 weeks. Do they get a win this season?
27% chance.
All right, that's a no.
Okay.
That's about the same chance as my Ravens Super Bowl ticket.
You wish your Ravens Super Bowl ticket was
I do wish
it
was
27%. And I do too, by the way.
each week it increases. So
let's hope.
Last guy is Austin Howard.
Okay, so Austin Howard, not a lot of detail on what he did, but he had a holding call late. And one of the things that's been said about that holding call is that it was a good holding call because he took care of Joe Flacco on the play. And I got no problem with that. From that standpoint, I'd rather he held than allowed a sack or a quarterback hit on the play. But the other part of that is that he had to hold because he was beaten. So that's not a good thing. So anyway, it was what it was. It cost him the difference between having an A and ending up with a B instead. So that cost him a full grade level with that holding call. And he finished with a B after adjustment.
All right. I want to. You mentioned earlier about the trick play with Stanley running, and then there's other plays like having Joe Flacco, who's got a bad back, run the ball late in the game when they're up. Marty Mornaway came out and said even his wife questions his play calling the next day. So I'm going to sit here and ask you the same question. What's going on with Marty when it's a relatively easy win against the Browns to be fooling around with some of this stuff.
Well, I think the announcers, it was like the only thing they were correct about the entire day. The announcers had unbelievably bad game management judgment, and they talked about that. Just terrible. I mean, you know, the notion of not going for it on fourth goal from the 1 yard line with the ability to pin the Browns back there as the worst possible result, it should have been a no brainer in terms
right,
of
to just
you,
go for
whether
it.
You go or not. Yeah. But these guys were awful with that. They were bad about other things in the game, but some of the play calling things I didn't like their complaints about certain play calling elements. But the Flacco thing, that was a legitimate risk, and I did not like running Flacco and having him dive. And Morningweg probably didn't call that. Flacco probably decided it, but putting Joe in a position to decide that is not good.
You don't think that? See, I watched that play a second time because when I first saw it, I thought, oh, Joe didn't see anyone open and he ran. But you watch that and he doesn't even look downfield. He just immediately runs like it was a play. It was a called play.
Okay, there were two plays. The first run, I think you're right that both of them were called runs.
Okay.
But the first one, there was a lot of danger involved. The second one was actually very minimal in terms of the danger on the touchdown.
Okay.
And
right.
What made that play is Jensen got into level too quickly and took Schobert out of the play. It was actually a fair distance away, and Jensen's got some decent athletic ability. Got into level two, and Schobert had no chance against him in terms of getting off that block. And that meant the entire middle of the field had no defenders because the Ravens otherwise spread.
Gotcha. I still don't like the call against the Browns. The risk-reward balance doesn't work out to me in a season where not only have the Ravens been banged up, but we've seen some star quarterbacks go down and out with injuries.
Yeah, it's a good point. Flacco already, of course, had a concussion, so
right.
If he got another one in the same season, that would be very bad. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so especially now when we just listed him pretty high up on the reason the Ravens are doing well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you covered the Stanley play a little bit. Were you concerned about how they brought Collins back out after they already had a big lead and the sideline reporter reporting that they're going to keep Collins out for the rest of the game as a precaution, but then they put him right back out there for a play?
Yeah, I didn't like it. And, you know, we've heard various things about Collins like getting migraines and whatnot and wearing that visor to try and avoid them.
But that's been like an entire career thing, right?
Yes, been an entire career. But I was looking at him sitting there on the sidelines, and I'm thinking, this guy just doesn't seem to be into the game in the normal way sitting there. Now, it was cold. It could have been something to do with that, and he just tried to conserve his heat and, you know, enjoy the bench as much as he can because it might be a heated bench. But there's something about it, something about the way his eyes were and his head was staring at the game that just wasn't like, boy, what's going on? I mean, you know, players have a lot of nervous energy. And they, you know, they go from the scoreboard to the field to the scoreboard, and then they're, you know, talking to somebody else. I mean, it's just, it's normal to be active. And he was almost catatonic on that bench, and that's what kind of bothered me about it.
You know, if it was a migraine issue, I totally feel for Alex Collins. My wife gets bad migraines, and she does not have the visor like that. I kind of wish I had that visor for her. But I know that with her, it knocks her out for the day with a migraine. I cannot imagine trying to play a football game and get banged around with a migraine.
Right.
So, all right, let's get to our offensive MVPs.
Sure, okay. So
the Ravens won, so we get to have some MVPs from the offense.
You
want to
go with your number three guy first?
Yeah, my number three is Chris Moore. I've been enjoying him as a wide receiver, but on special teams, and especially this week, he really stood out with how he runs down there and Cook gets that ball right in place. And Chris Moore seems to always be the guy there to stop the ball to make sure it's ending on that 3 yard line.
Yeah, it was a great week of that. And the Browns didn't seem to be doing anything to stop the Gunners in that game. So, very effective game for Moore. Can't argue with that one. I'm going to go with Buck Allen. I thought his running to run out the game was very effective, and the Ravens ought to hope that he's again coming back to contribute something on a per-touch basis, because that's been the problem. It really hasn't been durability for Allen or his ability to get on the field and do something. It's all about yards per touch with him. And before this game, it hadn't been good, but 13 for 70 in this one and all when the other team knows you're going to run is a heck of a package of plays.
My number two I'm giving to Stanley because I love to see big guys run. And it's better if he has the ball and running. But either way, I like to see a big guy run. I like that the Ravens are getting creative and giving teams something else to think about.
Yeah, that's a good one. Can't argue. And he didn't have a bad
game. Not to mention the line. He's been fine all year on the line.
Yeah. And he wasn't bad against Myles Garrett in this game. Did have a C-minus performance. But still, Myles Garrett's a talent, and they will meet many more times. Number two for me is Ryan Jensen. He had the best game on the offensive line, to the degree that the offensive line is still part of the reason that they're reducing turnovers, they are not allowing sacks. I think Jensen deserves more of that credit than we've given him so far, and he's my number two this week.
And my number one is Joe Flacco. Each week it seems like he's getting better this season, and this week he even got Breshad Perriman a catch.
Can't argue with that. My number one is Ben Watson. Four catches for, I think it was 74 in the game, including a nice 33-yard touchdown catch. Good to see him back in the offense. Joe needs another safety blanket that he can go to. I think if you have one at all three levels, that might be enough to get him through this postseason. So if it could be Woodhead from the backfield, maybe Collins some from the backfield, if it can be some combination of Watson and Boyle at tight end, probably mostly Watson is the guy it needs to be, and then Wallace as the deep threat, I think that could be viable for the postseason.
Right. All right. It is Film Study Mailbag time. Go on Twitter, send in your questions, hashtag Film Study Mailbag, and we'll answer them, whether they're offense or defense related, or if there's something else, I'll squeeze them in, and we will answer your questions at the end of each show. First one comes from a really smart guy on Twitter, at Josh Soroka, who wants to ask Ken, now that Marvin Lewis is leaving the Bengals, it kind of seemed like a quit before I get fired move. But what does that speak for the future of Marvin Lewis, and is there a place for him in Baltimore?
There'll be a place for Marvin Lewis certainly somewhere in the NFL, and probably as a defensive coordinator would be my guess, and not as a head coach, but who knows? He's been a reasonably successful coach over the years. He certainly has been in terms of getting the Bengals to the playoffs five straight years before they've now had two in a row that they haven't been. But yeah, I think he'll be back. And could he be with the Ravens as defensive coordinator? I think that's probably unlikely. I think Dean Pease may retire or he may not, but I think the Ravens will want to bring back Dean Pease if he will coach another year.
Gotcha. So you think Dean Pease, yeah, it's up to Dean Pease. They're not going to fire him after this season.
Let me talk through it. I think it is going to be up to Dean Pease, and I'd say there's maybe a 35% or 40% chance that he retires, and the rest of them he wants to coach another year. But even if we're in the 30 or 35% or the 35 or 40%, there's still a reasonable chance the Ravens would want to hire an innovator, and that's what I would really want too, is a guy who will take a good group of great players and layer on a scheme with that can allow them or create opportunities for them to do even more. And so I would love to have an innovator with this current set of young, very talented players, and that'd be exciting if they would try and expand their search to figure out who's the next great 15 or 20 year defensive coordinator out there.
Yeah, that would be something to be excited about. I also don't think that Marvin Lewis would fit under John Harbaugh. And I think the way Marvin Lewis, when I think of the Raven teams that were under Marvin Lewis, the defense, and when I think of how the Bengals are, they're a much more aggressive, a little bit rough in the play style when you think of how they played with the right. Steelers and stuff. And I don't think that fits under John Harbaugh and the doghouse.
Right. Well, they would certainly have to get that under control, and Marvin is probably capable of that. Part of that is a player personnel decisions in terms of
right.
who they're willing to get in Cincinnati.
Sure. All right. Other guys have came in with some questions. First one up is Shakiru, who says, "What are Ronnie Stanley's weaknesses, and has he regressed as the season has progressed?"
I don't think he's regressed. He had played three straight very good games before he had the C-minus against one of the best pass rushers in the game right now, Garrett. So what's his weakness? His major weaknesses right now are that I don't think he's completely healthy. And he's still playing. He had, a little bit of a neck thing. He had some kind of a stinger in his arm, I think. So he needs to work through what his injury problems are and do the best he can because the Ravens don't have any other choice to put out there. There is no other left tackle on this team, not even anybody I trust for a few snaps. So if they're, James Hurst could get a game over with if we were in the fourth quarter and up by two touchdowns. So that could work. But there's nobody I trust there for a starting a game, much less a playoff game.
All right. Dustin Cox says, do you think Max Williams still has a shot of becoming the receiving threat tight end the Ravens drafted him to be? I know he's a valuable blocker, but he's almost non-existent in the passing game. What is the biggest reason for this, and is it that they're not using him enough?
I think they have better options is really the issue, and his value as a blocker has been very handy this year that they've had him on the outside. They usually set him up either in the backfield or just offset off tackle. And a tight end can set up two ways. If he lines up in a three-point formation, more ways than that, but if he lines up in a three-point formation, which is as far as possible forward as he can, and you'll notice that because it always looks funny because the tackle's further back, but the tight end's further up than him. When you see that means he's going out for a pass. He's not going to try and block out of that formation. And I that's just not a place you normally see Max Williams. Max Williams is usually on the end, even with the furthest back bodies there, and he's looking to block, assist that tackle, block in the run game and whatnot. And I don't think he quite has the wheels to be an NFL tight end in terms of getting open. The days of having a tight end who would just be able to work their way into a hole in zone coverage, it's just not as easy to do that anymore. So I think that we'll see probably less from Williams, and he may only have one more year in Baltimore, and that's sad, but probably another team will find a way to use him more than the Ravens can here.
All right. Final one for tonight from Shay Oren. I just noticed that the game versus the Steelers that Marty Mornaway is also the Ravens QB coach. Can a full-time QB coach help Joe improve mechanically and or in decision making, etc.? Joe's gone through lots of coaches.
Right.
Does he need another?
Does he need another? Probably not. Does it would are there is there some way mechanically he could be improved? I'm sure. Would he be resistant to improving and taking advice from somebody in terms of improving his mechanics? Possibly. Joe's had, kind of a love-hate relationship with a lot of the offensive coordinators he's worked with. He was almost in a position where he's calling Cam Cameron names by the time he left. And, I didn't think that he was so good with Tressman either. Now, Tressman was a kind of an oddball
How
character,
about Jim
but
Zorn? Can we bring back Jim Zorn?
He might have been one of the guys that he had a better relationship with. Honestly, I couldn't tell you specifically who Joe had a great relationship with as a quarterback coach because Joe just doesn't wear that on his sleeve.
Right.
But there have been times where he's worn on his sleeve that he didn't like the offensive coordinator.
Oh, and he's also worn on his sleeve in some comments that he wasn't happy with the offensive play calling this year with Marty. So, all right, Ken. This week the Ravens play on Saturday versus the Colts. So I don't know if that's going to adjust our schedule. I guess Christmas is going to adjust our schedule, so it will be a little different next week. But until then, people should go on over to Russell Street Report. What do you have up there?
Stuff on the offense, stuff on the defense. Get your game pass out. See if you can follow along. Follow me on Twitter, please, at Film Study Ravens. We have a great discussion now. Got a fantastic group of analysts who really understand the game out on Twitter, and all are chiming in. Josh, you mentioned earlier the Josh Britton thing, and
Yeah, Zach
tell
Britton.
them about
So,
that. Zach Britton. Zach Britton.
yeah, there's a new episode of Section 336 that came out on Tuesday morning. So you should go check that out. That was a fun episode talking about the Orioles offseason. But there's no way we could have projected that Zach Britton would go down. So look for a special little short episode to come out later this week talking about how we think things need to be handled now with Zach Britton and how that affects the Orioles offseason and the Orioles plans for the future.
So, and you guys are in favor of cutting, or you want to wait until the episode to tell us what you do?
I think we should wait until the episode because I have not made up my mind yet. I'm flip-flopping.
Okay.
Part of me
Very
says
good.
Cut them, but if you can afford to only – all right. I don't trust Peter Angelos.
Okay.
And if you're cutting him just to save money, that's pointless. if you're cutting him to invest that money in something else, that's understandably. But it sure would be nice to have Zach Britton come in July when you really need him for that second half, assuming you're in a place to use him.
If he did come back in July, he could have trade value again, presumably at the deadline.
He could.
Just
exactly.
Pay a lot to get that trade value.
Right, really. Right. And then he'd also have to come in July and pitch and look healthy in order to get that trade value. And then you're still given a short rental period, so it's not a whole lot of trade value.
I'm not seeing an upside to that. It's not like a football contract where they can get out of it, right? Or is it an option year now for the Orioles?
There is some type of buyout in it.
Okay.
So
very good.
There's a penalty, which I'm sure is a lot less than the $10 million that he would cost for the year. I think he's a $9 or $10 million guy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably $1 or $2 million to get out.
Okay.
So.
Well, that's interesting. That's a tough decision. That's why sports being a business can be such a bitch sometimes.
Yep. That's what makes professional sports different. So, all right, Ken. Enjoy watching the Ravens on Saturday, and if I don't talk to you, have a good weekend and Christmas.
You too.
When your entire life is online, you need more than just speed from your internet. Xfinity gives you reliable in-home Wi-Fi coverage, plus protection from Wi-Fi network threats. Go online, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today to learn more. Restrictions apply.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters, the more your network matters, the more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.